The following days pass in much the same way. He works until his eyes feel as though they might cross, and he often joins Ray in his company for lunch. Then he continues in his work until it's time for bed. Oftentimes, Frank is already asleep by the time he returns. A week after he started his work on the charm, he is filled with a rush of wanderlust in the middle of the afternoon. He's been living in the palace, and all he's seen are a few bedrooms, the kitchens, his workshop. So he begins to walk when he cannot think, taking stairways and passages to new rooms. Many of the halls are occupied by Fay, who occasionally greet him, but more often silently watch him pass. On the way to the kitchens, he takes an unfamiliar turn and finds himself inside the library. The stacks are huge, lined with more books than he's ever seen in his life. And Frank is there, sprawled on a couch near the entrance. He looks up when Gerard enters.
"Did you have need of me?"
No, I was just...
exploring.
Gerard looks around the room, admiring the many bright spines.
"What are you doing?"
Frank holds the book up so only his nose and eyes are visible above it.
"Reading?"
Gerard sighs.
"Why?"
Frank always seems to be buried in some book. Reading before bed seems a sensible enough hobby. So sensible that it's odd a creature like Frank would be so devoted to it. But does he read all day as well?
"I grew up alone in the wilderness."
Frank lowers the book, closing it in his lap. There's a challenge to his voice, even though he's smirking.
"There's a lot to learn."
Perhaps it is the return to his work, a sense of purpose, that makes him bold. Or perhaps he has simply reached the limits of fear.
"I didn't think you would care much about petty human things."
Frank arches an eyebrow, leaning back. But he answers, which is more than Gerard expected.
"I'm responsible for two worlds. I think you would rather I know something of them?"
It's a distressingly good answer, and Gerard sighs.
"I suppose. Books will only teach you so much." "And would you like to fill in the blanks?"
Frank's smirk is venomous, and Gerard's stomach turns over.
"Teach me to feel like a human?"
That is a task that is even more daunting than the one already set before him, but Gerard tips his chin up.
"If you want."
Frank looks, not startled precisely, but certainly contemplative. Gerard thinks he's managed to surprise him. After a moment, he picks up his book again.
"That won't be necessary."
Gerard waits for a moment, to see if he'll speak again, but Frank keeps his eyes on the page. He hasn't been dismissed, so he heads for the wall to examine the books on the tall shelves. He had a small shelf with a few battered volumes on it at home, picked up by ways from peddlers over the years. They may not have been as fine as these, with worn spines and drips of ink or ale on the pages, but they were well loved. The breadth of options is staggering, and after browsing for a while, Gerard takes a random book with gold lettering on the spine. He's never had much of a choice for reading material, and so far he's managed to find enjoyment in what he's had. This one catches the light. He takes it back to the workshop with him. Frank does not speak to him as he leaves. That night, they both read in bed, side by side and not touching. Gerard's book turns out to be a collection of poems. It's very beautiful, and he feels strange, almost dirty, reading it beside Frank, who could never understand this depth of emotion. He finishes the book after a few days. The carefully crafted words of love and longing are a welcome relief from day after day of stagnant failure. He begins to suspect that this charm cannot be made, but he has no choice but to soldier on, wasting energy and ingredients on charms that snap or shudder apart in his hands. He sets the book aside and, still with hours to wait before Frank will turn out the lights, retrieves the paper and pen that'll still wait by his bedside. The feel of the pen is not as good as the charcoal in his workshop, but he still finds satisfaction drawing it across the page, sketching idly. He sets his hand and his imagination free, savoring the opportunity to draw something besides plans for yet another charm that will fail. He's already finished the head and sketched out the shape of the body, wings, when he realizes Frank is watching him. He ignores it, filling in the feathers on the wings and going back in to add darker shading to the curve of the beak.
"I didn't know you were an artist."
Gerard stills his pen and looks over at Frank.
"I'm not, really. Just this, sometimes. It's relaxing."
Frank is still looking at the paper, the mostly formed inky raven perching on the vague outline of a branch, so Gerard goes back to it. He colors in a dark claw, giving the bird a solid grip. Once he's finished to his satisfaction, it's time to sleep. He sets the drawing on the table and slides back under the covers, adjusting the pillow. Frank watches him the whole time, his own book already closed and set aside. Finally, he turns off the light. They lie in their usual silence in the warm darkness, but then Frank speaks. It's the first time he's ever spoken to Gerard in the dark like this.
Why did you draw that?
Gerard considers not answering, pretending that he's already asleep, but there's really no reason to. He keeps his eyes closed, though.
I just wanted to. Not everything has a reason.
Hmm, Frank says, and then falls silent. Gerard rolls onto his side, facing away from Frank, and tries to ignore the slight tightness in his chest, the images of dark birds in his mind's eye. In the morning, when Frank is gone, Gerard takes the book of poetry and sets it by Frank's side of the bed, on top of the thick tome he's been reading. It sits in the back of his mind, at the pit of his stomach through the whole day, and he isn't sure if it's a good or a bad feeling. He's easily distracted, joins Ray for a long lunch, and then goes for a walk in the courtyard instead of returning to the workshop or to the library, where he knows Frank is likely to be waiting. When he returns to bed, Frank just holds the book up to him with an arched eyebrow. Histories won't teach you everything. Gerard crawls into the bed and keeps his eyes down, even as he can feel a slight flush coming to his cheeks.
That is what being human is like.
Thank you for your input,
Frank says, a little mocking, but he sets the book in his lap even so. Gerard picks up his pen again. He's deep into a portrait, not of Michael or Elena or his parents. Those things would hurt too much. Just of a farmer from home. When Frank suddenly says,
"What do you want?"
Gerard curls his fingers tighter around the pen and looks sideways at Frank.
"My freedom?"
Frank's lip curls.
"Not what I meant. For your help. For the book."
"Nothing," Gerard says. He looks down at the craggy but smiling face he's drawn.
"I didn't give it to you because I wanted something."
"But there must be something I can give you."
Frank sounds frustrated, and Gerard remembers the stories. Fae are notorious tricksters, true, but they are also obsessed with deals and debts. They don't do favors, or, it seems, gestures of kindness. At least, not with humans. Gerard has no interest or patience for this.
"There's nothing I want that you'll grant me. You don't owe me."
"I can get you paints," Frank continues, as though Gerard hasn't spoken at all. "Or gold."
"I don't want your gold."
Gerard sets the pen down and pinches the bridge of his nose. He'll have no peace, it seems, until Frank is convinced that there is no debt between them. He casts about for something, anything that he lacks. The clothes Frank had created for him that first night never seem to dirty, feel fresh every morning when he puts them on, but the fact remains that he has only one shirt and pair of trousers, one nightshirt.
"I'm sick of wearing the same clothes every day. I want new clothes."
"Fine," Frank says, satisfaction rich in his tone. "Done."
"Wonderful." Gerard shakes his head and picks up his pen again, back to his drawing. When he wakes, he instinctively looks around the room for Frank, though Frank is never there. It is still empty, but now there is a piece of parchment propped between the crystal knobs on the wardrobe against the wall. Gerard climbs out of bed to investigate. Written in a steady and blocky hand, the page reads,
"Your repayment."
Inside, he finds a veritable rainbow. There are shirts and trousers, of course, but there are also waistcoats, elaborate jackets, and rich fabrics. The kind of clothing he's pictured from stories Elena told that her mother, who apprenticed with a capital city weaver, told her, that he's quietly sketched a few times. It's ridiculously unnecessary, far too much frippery for a simple village boy like himself, but he can't help trailing his fingers over gold braid, velvet cuffs, fat shiny buttons. He considers for a while, afraid he'll look vain and foolish in something so dandified, then realizes that he doesn't care what anyone here thinks of him. He puts on a gray waistcoat with big black buttons and a brilliant crimson jacket piped with black that almost reaches his knees. The Fae he passes on his way to the workshop ignore him, as usual, but when he comes to lunch, Ray makes him turn to show off his new wardrobe. He blushes a bit, quietly pleased, and meets Frank's eye once he's seated. Frank gives him a smirk that Gerard doesn't know how to interpret. It doesn't do anything to quell his flush. He finds himself spending time in the library when he can't think, can't focus on the charm any longer. Frank always sits on the same couch, generally surrounded by books. Since Gerard left him the volume of poetry, he's noticed that Frank's selection varies widely, anything from a compendium of trade agreements to a book of fairy tales.
"Learning our perspective?" Gerard asks on the day he sees Frank reading the fairy story book with the filigreed cover,
going to the small pile on the floor that he's been cultivating of intriguing books. It often grows faster than it ought to, and really, there's only one potential suspect. He picks out a book and settles in his usual armchair.
"These stories are ridiculous," Frank says, though he doesn't look up from the page. Gerard has learned that means he's truly captivated by a story. "And patently untrue. No wonder all of you act like frightened rabbits."
"It's not as though your people have been forthcoming." Gerard folds his legs. He hasn't opened his book yet. "This is all we know."
"It's nonsensical."
Frank shakes his head, and there's a little furrow of concentration in the center of his brow that Gerard can't help but find charming. They don't usually talk, instead just reading in a silence that Gerard might even dare to call companionable. It's a welcome distraction from the stress of the workshop, a comfortable oasis for his mind. He has never asked Frank for permission to join him, but it isn't as though Frank has ever been shy. If he wanted Gerard to leave, he would certainly say so. Gerard is close. He knows it. So close. And then it all unravels in front of him. He's finally gotten the proper ratio of cedar to ebony, notched together into a smooth triangle, a polished metal disc hanging in the center to reflect bad intentions back upon the intender. It should be perfectly balanced, but every time he tries to weave, it all falls apart when he tries to lay it over the charm, disparate threads of magic unraveling. Elena taught him how to vent his frustrations, that to destroy his own work would only set him back further. But he has never been so vexed, and he has to hold on to the edge of the work table to stop himself from flinging the fucking thing against the wall. He can't stay here any longer, looking at the accursed failure. The air is freer once he reaches the bottom of the stairs, but it means he can more acutely feel the pounding in his head. He doesn't know why it won't just work. A glass of water might be just what he needs. On the way to the kitchen, Gerard passes the hallway that leads to the library. He pauses and... perhaps talking to Frank would help him with the project. A deeper understanding of the subject is the best course to improve a charm. It's a sensible decision. The door is partially cracked, and Gerard leans closer to peer inside at Frank's usual couch. And Frank is there. But he isn't sprawled amongst a variety of open books or focused on just one, his feet tucked in tight. He's curled up in Ray's lap, his head on Ray's broad chest. Ray's fingers card through Frank's dark hair, and Gerard feels a sick twist in his stomach. He turns on his heel, before either of them can notice him, and walks back to the main hallway as quickly as he can without making too much noise. His head aches worse, suddenly, and he feels a bit unbalanced. He leans up against a column, letting his head fall back to hit the marble and closing his eyes. He should have known. Since he's gotten here, it's been clear that Ray is Frank's right hand, his lieutenant. And every night, Frank has slept beside Gerard and not once tried to press his advantage. He wonders why Frank hasn't taken Ray to his bed officially, made him his consort. But there will be some obscure fey political reason that it can't be, of course. It makes sense now why Frank has kept Gerard in his bed. It's an easy excuse to divert attention from where his true affections lie. There's no reason not to continue on to the kitchen for his water, like he planned in the first place, so he does. And once he's finished, well... he could return to the workshop and look at the charm with fresh eyes, or he could go back to the library. That thought makes him want to go crawl into bed, but his bed is Frank's bed, and that's enough to bring his headache back. Instead, he goes nowhere. The palace is massive, and most of it is still a mystery to him, so he wanders. There are shining halls and locked doors, and he passes a few fae who eye him with either distrust or intrigue. But for some reason, he isn't frightened of them. The inside of his chest feels like it's been hollowed out, and any fear he once had just disappears, like a pebble slipped into a deep black lake, carefully so not even a ripple shows. He climbs another staircase, crosses an elaborate mosaic laid in marble, and enters another wing. This one seems empty. He doesn't see another fae or human, and it smells slightly musty. There's dust here. He hasn't seen a speck of dust since Frank first brought him into the palace. Everything is decorated in white and gold, with delicate filigree instead of the ornate carvings that fill the rest of the palace. His footsteps echo through the empty hall, past closed doors and windows hidden by thick damask drapes. At the end of the hall, there are double doors, like the ones on the room he and Frank share. But these are inlaid with gold, and the handles are gracefully curved. He opens the door. It's surprisingly light, but it screeches as it opens. This part of the palace has clearly been neglected by the servants who keep the rest of it still glistening. The room inside is lavish, like every other room, but also deeply feminine. The bed is smaller than the one in his and Frank's room, though still massive, and covered in pale blue silks. The drapes are a slightly deeper blue, a sumptuous floral pattern, and there is a dressing table where the desk and chair in Frank's room are. Gerard crosses to the table and picks up a curvy glass bottle of what seems to be perfume. Everything here is just so, not a thing out of place. He wonders if Frank's coup was the last time someone was in here, or if it had been even longer than that. He turns around and sees another piece of furniture in the far corner of the room. It was out of his line of sight when he entered. It's small and white, dwarfed in this room, and it isn't until he takes a few steps closer that he realizes what it is. Gerard knows he should leave, keep walking straight out the door, out of this empty hall, and back to the world that he's come to know as normal. He can go back to his workshop now. His headache is gone, and perhaps he could finish the charms if Frank will finally release him. This is not something that he was ever meant to see. This is not something that should be here, couldn't have been here, which means Frank brought all this back to recreate a memory that he never intended anyone to find. But he is enraptured, unable to resist, and though he should flee, he finds himself resting his fingertips on the edge of the bassinet. In an instant, Frank is there, beside him, and he shoves him out of the way. Gerard forgets that Frank is strong, too. He doesn't have to depend on magic to push Gerard up against the wall.
"What do you think you're doing?"
"I just went for a walk." Gerard isn't used to being physically threatened, hasn't been pushed around since he was a child. He's a weaver. The position commands a certain respect, even if he personally doesn't. His breath is coming faster, panic rising. "I just wanted to clear my head."
"Does this look like a place to clear your head?"
Frank's voice is low and venomous. Gerard hasn't been this afraid of him since the first night, when he appeared in Gerard's home to take him away. And even then, he was confused. Now he knows exactly what Frank is, what he is capable of, and he knows that Frank is furious with him. His black eyes and mouthful of sharp teeth hadn't seemed threatening for weeks, but now they make his heart pound.
"This is private!"
"I didn't know." Gerard stares down at him. He doesn't know if trying to push himself free would help or harm.
"But you stayed. You wanted to see. You wanted to touch."
Frank is practically snarling now, lips drawn back in a sneer.
"Come to gawk at where the Raven boy spent his first days?"
Gerard swallows hard. He tries to remind himself that he did nothing wrong, nothing to deserve Frank's ire. It's less comforting than he'd hoped. "I was curious. I didn't hurt anything."
"Curious?"
Frank hisses at that. The dark rune on his neck is pulsing, shifting on his skin.
"What's there to hurt? It's not as though I'm a person, right, Gerard?"
"I didn't say that." Gerard shudders, trying carefully to extricate himself from Frank's grip, but he just holds tighter. He stops trying to struggle, unsure of how much more tightly Frank would grab him if pressed.
"You didn't have to. I know how you think."
Frank lets go of him, but Gerard stays still anyway. Frank turns slightly, away from him, to look down into the cradle.
"Humans. She didn't think I could feel either."
Gerard is torn. Keeping his mouth shut would be wise, but Frank looks half-broken, and it makes Gerard's ribs ache to see him like this. "The Queen?"
"The Queen. Except to me, she was Mother."
Frank runs his own hand over the side of the cradle, what Gerard intended to do before he appeared.
"She was my mother, and she abandoned me in the woods like an unwanted dog. But that would be too cruel for a dog, wouldn't it?"
"It's cruel." Gerard agrees quietly. Frank gives no indication of having heard him. He's still staring into the bassinet, as though transfixed. Transported, perhaps, to another time. Gerard knew, of course, that the queen in the story had her demon babe sent to the woods, but it always seemed like a heroic gesture, a moment of triumph. The slowly blooming feeling in his stomach, thinking of Frank as a baby left to die in the woods, doesn't feel like triumph.
"You should go back now."
Frank doesn't look at him, and Gerard doesn't chance waiting or speaking again. He leaves, not running, but walking fast enough that he's out of breath when he finally stops at the foot of the stairs to his workshop. Now he craves the serenity of a project, to set his mind to work and not to have to think about any of this. But sitting at his workbench, he finds it is impossible not to think of Frank, the scene he witnessed. To see Frank so raw and exposed like that, he never considered that side of the story, of Frank. Frank was a child once, if a child born out of darkness. He's powerful now, come fully into what Gerard would have easily called dark powers, but still, he acts and speaks like any other man. He has been petty and callous, but he has also been kind, clever, charming. He read Gerard's book of poetry. He contains multitudes that Gerard never could have guessed a fae could, and he is not a creature. Gerard stares down at the charm left half-finished on the table, his fingers almost tingling with the realization. Frank is not a beast or a dark thing. He is a man, whatever his origins. Perhaps they all are. He was raised to think of the fae like especially deadly animals. But they have their jests, their prejudices, their culture. Their races have mistrusted each other for centuries, and to what end? Pain and trickery on both sides, keeping every man on his guard. Frank has taken the throne to change that. Balance is what they have both been seeking. The charm is balanced. Gerard knows that. He's tinkered enough to bring it to perfection, at a loss for what more he could do to make it take the magic. It occurs to him, picking it up and holding it in his hands, that maybe the error was never in the weaving. It was in the weaver. He thinks about Frank, not as a man twisted by dark magic or as a fae lightened by a human side, but as a whole and complete person. He truly is both and neither, but he is not unlike anything Gerard has seen before. Weaving for him is no different than weaving for any of the villagers back home. Slowly, the glimmering threads start to come together, taking shape. Gerard breathes through his nose the way Elena taught him, to remain steady, keeps his hands constantly moving and guiding, coaxing his magic into the shapes he needs. He weaves for protection from magic and enemies, as Frank requested, and he draws from the fortitude of the cedar and weaves in a thread for wisdom and good judgment, the things a king needs. The charm comes together, delicate and shining in the air, and slowly Gerard lowers it to the triangle of wood on the table before him, tucking in the ends so it all fits together, blending until the weaving has sunken into the wood, joined in harmony. Gerard slowly lowers his hands to rest on the table on either side. His work is done. The charm is complete. Complete, and now perhaps he'll be freed, sent back to his village to pick up where he left off. Back to weaving the same charms day in and out, living alone in his quiet house. Away from Frank, who is both familiar and a mystery, terrifying, fascinating, and in love with someone else. He sets the charm inside one of the drawers of the workbench before he goes back to his room. Frank is not there, but Gerard can wait here for him. He uses the parchment stashed in his bedside table to try to write a letter to Michael, but he doesn't know what to say. After too many abortive starts, he returns to the bed. The sun is gone and the air cool when Gerard wakes up to find the bed and room still empty. Frank has not returned. He sleeps fitfully, waking up every hour and rolling over to see if the other side of the bed is occupied. It never is. In the morning, his head aches from exhaustion, but he cannot sleep any longer. There is a twist in his stomach that he did not expect, though he was a fool to think he could avoid it. Now that he has allowed himself to really think of Frank as a man, he can no longer ignore his own feelings. The warmth he's felt when Frank is near, the jealousy of seeing him with Ray, the ache of his bitter childhood. What he feels is not fear, and has not been for a long time. None of the fancy clothes that Frank made for him seem right, so he dresses simply in a shirt and trousers as he did that first week. Gerard finds Ray coming out of the hall after breakfast, catching him by the elbow. "Could we speak?" Ray nods, and they move away from the normal path, into a side hall where Gerard doesn't think they'll be overheard or interrupted. "I... upset Frank," he starts. He's practiced this in his head all morning, but it's still hard to get the words out. "I didn't intend to, but he's angry with me. He didn't come to bed last night." "Gerard, I know you can't fix it," Gerard interrupts. "And I'm sure you would rather I left his bed, but this isn't about that." Ray stares down at him, and for a moment Gerard thinks that he's angry too. Then Ray is leaning in close, frowning, voice low. "Why would I want you to leave his bed?" Gerard stares back and looks from side to side, but no one is there. "So that you could be in it?" An expression passes over Ray's face that Gerard cannot interpret, and then he's laughing, full-throated hoots that reverberate through the hallway. Gerard takes a step away from him, and he suspects that his eyes are bugging out, because Ray waves a hand at him. "No, no, sorry, sorry, I don't want to be in Frank's bed, at all." "But I saw you." Gerard feels a hot flush of guilt, for spying, for all of this. "But they're talking about it now. In the library, the two of you were... close." That sobers Ray, though there's still crinkles around his eyes. "That wasn't what you're thinking. Has Frank ever told you who I am?" Gerard shakes his head. He's never been able to identify Ray as any sort of fae from stories, though he is clearly far from human.
I'm a forest spirit, a guardian, really.
Ray folds his hands together, like a school teacher.
The forest I care for is just outside the palace walls.
It only takes a moment for Gerard to understand, though he has to voice his question, to be sure. The forest where they left Frank. You found him?
He was a baby.
Ray sighs and shrugs.
A little fiercer than usual, maybe, but still. I had the birds make a nest for him, watched over him. I taught him how to change his shape. He's like a brother to me. You have a younger brother, don't you?
Michael is the only thing Gerard really misses from home, even though he knows that he's safe and at least has Marnie. But he'll always be his brother. And he nods. It makes sense. Selfishly, deep inside his chest, he feels relieved. He's a fool to lust after Frank, but after the cutting jealousy he felt yesterday, it's impossible to deny it any longer. It's good that he had you. Gerard swallows hard. Will you talk to him for me, please? Tell him I didn't mean to upset him, and... This is the part he doesn't want to speak, but he thinks it might be his only chance. Tell him that his charm is ready.
Really?
Ray's eyes light up, and Gerard wishes he could feel the satisfaction of a finished job. It's usually a release, especially a charm that's needed as much care and effort as this one, but now he finds that he doesn't want the work to be over. He could become a weaver for the court, he supposes, but there's little reason for Frank to keep him in his bed. Gerard nods. It's in my workshop. He can come and test it if he'd like.
I'll tell him that.
Ray looks like he wants to say something else, and eventually says,
He'll be glad.
Gerard hopes he will be, but on the way back to the workshop, he finds himself imagining Frank scoffing at the charm, demanding Gerard weave him another. Something even bigger and stronger, with plenty of exotic ingredients that will take ages to procure. A charm that will give Gerard time to sleep beside him and show him that he's not afraid, that he wants more than this. By the time he gets to the shop, Frank is waiting there. He shifts his weight back and forth, clearly full of anticipation, but he doesn't meet Gerard's eyes.
Let's see it.
Gerard passes him to the bench, opening the drawer. He can feel the charm humming, eager for his touch. They don't like to be left alone with no one to guard, especially ones that were crafted for a specific person. He picks it up and holds it out to Frank. He's almost certain Frank can feel the hum, too, by the careful way he approaches, stretching out his hand to take it. His fingers brush against Gerard's palm when he takes the charm from him. The charm comes to life once Frank is holding it. Gerard can feel it buzz, satisfied, covering him. Frank's fingers curl around it, holding tight, and finally he looks up at Gerard. His eyes are wide.
This is strong.
It's what you asked for. Gerard forces himself to shrug instead of saying, It's strong because I love you, because I put my heart into it. Isn't that what you wanted me to do all along?
Good. You did well.
Frank weighs it in his hand, then reaches up behind his neck to fiddle with the chain of the charm he already wears. Gerard's charm. For a heart-stopping moment, Gerard thinks he's going to take it off and give it back, but no. He threads the end of the charm through the loop of the triangle so both charms lay side by side on his chest. Gerard knows it will take them a few minutes to get used to each other, adjust, but they'll do it, and Frank will be safer than ever. Gerard inclines his head. Thank you, Your Highness.
Tonight we will celebrate.
Frank's voice is even, and Gerard can't bring himself to look at him. After a long pause, he continues.
And tomorrow I will return you to your village. You've served me well.
Yes, Your Highness, Gerard says, hoping his voice stays even, when his heart is fluttering like a trapped, frightened bird in his chest. The celebration will be a raucous one, surely. Gerard dresses for the occasion, choosing one of the gorgeous jackets Frank had created for him once. He bypasses the long, colorful coats he'd favored before for a cropped black jacket with engraved silver buttons down each side. It doesn't feel as good to wear it now, knowing that his work is done. He wonders if the clothes would disappear at the palace gate, like leprechaun's gold in the stories. Not that he'll have much of a reason to wear such flamboyant and fine things back in the village. By the time he reaches the great hall, the carousing has already begun. He's used to interacting with the different sorts of fae now. He even exchanges a nod with the satyr he's often dined with. This will be his last night amongst them. It seems right to be friendly. A woman with blank, milky eyes presses a mug into his hand. It smells deeply alcoholic, and he just takes a sip. As tempting as it is to erase his worries, he's in no mood to make a fool of himself. Knowing him, by the end of the night he would be flinging himself at Frank's feet, begging to be allowed to stay, to be his consort in truth. It's an ugly scene to imagine, and Gerard is very interested in keeping it from coming true. The rest of the Fae have no such concerns, it seems. More than a few couples are already entwined along the outskirts of the room, and a pretty male nymph sits across the laps of two women with black curling horns. The rest of them are laughing loudly, leaning close, and he has little doubt this could degenerate into an orgy by night's end. Gerard takes another sip of his drink.
Gerard!
Ray cuts away from a group of Fae. His cheeks are flushed, and there are green leaves in his hair. It looks as though they might have grown there.
Congratulations! Wonderful work! Just superb!
Thank you. Despite his concerns, the compliment does warm him. Ray has been a fine companion to have, keeping him steady in this strange world. He hopes Ray will still guide Frank well now that he's king. I'm glad to have been useful. Ray claps his shoulder with a hearty hand.
More than useful. You've been great. I wish you could stay and make something for me.
Yes, well. Gerard forces the smile to stay on his face. I wouldn't want to overstay my welcome.
Nonsense.
Ray's face crumples easily, and Gerard is fairly certain he's more in his cups than he initially appeared. He shakes his head.
Frank told me how eager you were to get home. I'm glad that he's decided not to be difficult.
He did? Gerard's chest tightens, but Ray is already drifting away, called back by his friends, and leaving Gerard with a cheery wave and a sloshed toast. Ray might be drunk, but he has no reason to lie.
Why would Frank say that?
He knows he's never said any such thing to Frank. And to be difficult about Gerard leaving? His traitorous heart jumps to the thought that Frank doesn't want him to leave any more than he wants to go. It's a foolish notion, but one that takes root like a hook in his gut. If he could talk to Frank, maybe he could find out the truth, even obliquely. But Frank is the center of attention. Even more than usual, he's mobbed by loyal subjects and courtiers. His new charm lays thick and unmistakable on his chest. This is his night to show it off, Gerard supposes, even if it seems tacky to him. A charm is something intensely personal. Besides, you hardly want to alert your enemies to what you are and aren't charmed against. In the midst of the celebrations, Gerard feels a shiver, like someone dragged a fingernail down his spine. He only has a moment to wonder what caused it when he feels like his chest has been filled with ice. Everyone around him has stopped, too. The cheerful cacophony vanished in an instant. The only thing he could think is, she's here. Slowly he turns and he sees her. The witch is tall and inscrutable, her face smooth but wizened, as if she could be both young and old at once. Her features are sharp, and her pale hair is wrapped up in a knot at the base of her neck. Gerard isn't sure if it's white or blonde. She wears a talon around her neck, rudimentary as far as charms go, but then she has her own magic to protect her.
"There you are," she says, "right where I left you."
Gerard tears his eyes away from her to look to Frank, who is stricken. He is pale, with a sheen of sweat on his forehead. His black eyes are wide, and for the first time they look dull, almost absent of light. The witch takes a step toward him, and the Fae part like the sea before her. Gerard wants to shout at them to do something. They have magic, tricks and claws. They could help him. But this witch is a legend even to them. If Frank can't survive her on his own, he could never rule them. Frank's voice is weak, and he swallows hard. Silently, Gerard prays for him to find his voice. When he speaks again, he is stronger, lacking in his usual bravado, but not wavering.
I am not waiting for you. I am not yours.
The witch laughs. It's a terrible sound that sets Gerard's teeth on edge.
What else would you be? A king? This is a fantasy pet. I made you, and now I've found you. You've been clever hiding away, but you got greedy. You wanted attention.
She grins.
You have my attention.
I wanted to help my people.
Frank shifts his weight slightly, settling into what Gerard can tell is a stronger stance. He's ready to fight if necessary, though Gerard isn't sure how his magic will stack up against hers, if he can even turn his magic against the woman who created him.
You don't have a people, you pathetic little creature.
The witch almost sounds sorry for him. Gerard's stomach turns.
I made you. You are a curse. You are a thing. A tool. A rebellious one, to be sure. But now I will make use of you.
Frank flinches visibly, and Gerard imagines sending all of his strength to Frank, whatever pitiable amount he has. but Frank stands his ground and meets her eyes.
I have protection.
A charm?
The witch looks around the room, through the crowd, until her eyes land on Gerard. They bore into him, and he is frozen.
Made by this little one, it seems. Unfortunately for you, this boy is far from a master weaver. I can taste amateur on him.
Slowly, she raises her hand, palm extended to Frank, but she keeps her eyes on Gerard. She is staring at him, only him, when he hears the unmistakable crack of wood. The charm is broken. Gerard's breath vanishes from his throat. He has failed. Frank will be taken, forced into servitude. What will happen without him? No king at all can hardly be good for the country. And more than that, this means all the hours Elena spent with him, teaching him, were a waste. He's nowhere near the weaver that she was. He can talk endlessly, tell Frank and all these gathered fae that a charm is never foolproof, that they can only withstand so much. But Elena could have done it. He knows she could have, and he's tried to live up to her memory. But he can't. And now his failure will cost all of them. He tears his eyes away from the witch and looks to Frank, and Frank is staring at him with such betrayal. He thinks that Gerard did this on purpose. There's a thick crack going through the charm where the wood cleaved apart. It makes him feel as though the crack is in his own chest to see it. He can't tear his eyes away, and he sees the other charm. Still nestled behind the broken charm is his old charm, the one Frank took from him, the one that once gave Frank the power to take over the kingdom. It must still be worth something. That charm was his for years, worn against his skin, next to his heart. Elena had watched with a smile while he wove it, cupped her warm hands around him once it was done. A charm will adjust, to be sure, but it never forgets its original owner. I love him, Gerard tells the charm. He stares at it and thinks as hard as he can, feels as hard as he possibly can, opens up his heart to everything he's done his best to keep tamped down. I love him. I love him. Please help him. I love him. He doesn't realize that he's spoken aloud until the witch laughs again.
Poor sad human boy. Do not worry. Your beloved will remove your pain very soon.
Gerard ignores her, but he does pull his gaze from the charm to Frank's face. There's an openness to his face that Gerard only ever glimpsed on long afternoons in the library, or occasionally just before they fell asleep. He meets Gerard's eyes, and just barely. He nods. His heart swells, even in this moment of terror, and he hears a gasp ripple through the crowd. His charm has started to glow again, like it did when it first hung around Frank's neck. Brighter, ever brighter.
What is this?
The witch reaches her hand out again, but this charm will not shatter. It has been imbued with years of love and protection, caring from Elena and Michael, and now his and Frank's love for each other. Gerard knows, somehow, that it is too strong, and the thought makes him giddily happy. The charm glows stronger.
This is what my human boy gave me.
Frank cocks his chin up, some of his old daring in his stance and voice.
A gift of love, freely given.
It is impossible!
The witch bares her yellowed teeth to him.
A curse cannot love or be loved!
Then I,
Frank grins back, showing off his own pointed teeth,
am not your curse. Not any more.
Gerard has never heard anything quite like the shriek she let out, and he hopes that he never will again. He flinches away from the sound, and when he opens his eyes again, she is gone. The entire hall is silent as a grave for only a moment, and then, as though someone has brought sound back to the world again, they start to cheer and holler. Gerard feels as though he's surfaced from underwater, not sure quite what is happening. He can't understand most of what they're saying, but hands are clapping his back and shoulders, ruffling his hair. He smiles instinctively at them, but all he can think of is pushing forward, trying to get to Frank. No face stands in his way. At this point, he suspects none would dare to. And finally, finally, their mouths meet, twining desperately together. He can feel the hard lump of the charm, slightly warm against his chest. Frank kisses as though he's starving, and Gerard wonders for a hysterical moment how different a kiss after avoiding doom and destruction is from the everyday sort before he stops thinking altogether. He's too happy to be cautious either, and Frank nicks him with a tooth as they part. Gerard pulls away with a fat drop of blood welling on his lower lip, breathing hard. Frank stares at it until Gerard licks it off with a quick dart of his tongue. Then Frank is moaning, capturing his lips again. The cut stings, but the pain only serves to sharpen the pleasure. When finally Frank relinquishes his mouth again, Gerard can see the gawking Fay on either side of them. He flushes, curling his fingers against Frank's side just to touch. "We seem to have an... audience."
"I don't care."
Frank's voice is so rough, thick with lust. Gerard understands. Frank reaches for him, then pauses, glaring at someone over Gerard's shoulder.
"No, I do care. I want you all to myself."
"Take me, then," Gerard whispers, breathless. Frank groans and turns even darker. "Back to the room, I meant." Frank grins.
"Of course you did."
No one tries to stop them as they drag each other out of the hall, whoever gains the forward position tugging the other along. Gerard catches Ray's eye. He looks pleased and not even a little surprised.
"Wait,"
Frank says once they're out of the room, the door shutting out the light and sound to the darkened hallway.
"What are we doing?"
For a moment, Gerard's heart seems to stop, but then Frank is squeezing his hand and they're there, back in the bedroom within the span of a blink.
"Fuck."
Gerard wraps his hands around Frank's jaw and pulls him in for a hard kiss. Frank was almost taken from him. But if the witch hadn't come, he would have left. He would have walked away from all of this, and that thought makes him almost grateful for her.
"You have no idea how much I've wanted this."
Frank's words are almost lost into his mouth, spoken a mere inch from his lips, but Gerard catches each one.
"I've imagined you in every possible way."
"You made me share your bed." Gerard can't help but laugh at the ridiculousness of it when he speaks it aloud. Here, pressed tight against Frank, it all seems so funny. "And you never tried to seduce me, not once."
"I was being courtly,"
Frank says, affronted. But it's not enough of an affront to make him move away or stop touching Gerard, so it must not be too bad.
"It's not as though you gave any indication you wanted to be seduced."
Too much wasted time. Gerard slides his hand down to Frank's hip. He feels incredibly daring, but secure at the same time. He doesn't have any reason to think that Frank would let him down. "Let's not waste any more."
"Never."
Frank pushes him back. Grinning, he shrugs out of his jacket and starts fumbling with his buttons.
"I thought you'd like this the old-fashioned way."
"You mean the human way."
But Gerard follows his lead, stripping down until he's left with only a pair of shorts to conceal his modesty. Not that he feels particularly modest with the way they're clinging to the bulge of his cock. Frank hooks his thumb into the waistband of his trousers, smirking back at Gerard.
"I think I'm going to like it the human way."
Gerard flushes, grinning back despite himself. "Show me then." In a smooth motion, Frank shoves his trousers down, leaving him completely nude. He steps out of the pants and holds his arms out to Gerard, presenting himself for inspection. Gerard only glimpsed Frank's torso when he first met him out in the woods, but now he can look as long as he wants. His pale skin is painted all over with the dark runes and symbols that he knows now are the physical manifestation of the curse in Frank's skin. The thought turned his stomach once, but now he can see the beauty in the steady black lines, especially when Frank turns to walk towards the bed, showing his inky wings. Frank climbs onto the bed and rolls over onto his back, flopping in the center of the bed and watching Gerard.
"Are you planning to join me?"
He doesn't have to ask twice. Gerard wriggles out of his shorts so he can join Frank in bed. This is nothing like sleeping a respectable 2 feet away from Frank at night. This is flesh on flesh, hot and needy. Gerard gasps when Frank grinds against his hip. "We were so close," he murmurs, kissing Frank's jaw. "All this time."
"I know."
Frank's arm wraps tight around his waist, holding him close.
"But now I'm free."
"I was so afraid." Gerard closes his eyes. He doesn't want to think about it. It feels like only now his heart has stopped pounding. Imagining what would have happened if all the charms had failed, if the witch had taken Frank back, it gives him shivers. But that didn't happen. He's here now in Frank's arms, and that's what he wants to focus on. He leans in to kiss Frank again, then moves away so he can kiss Frank's collarbone. Then his belly, his hip, until he's close enough to see the eagerness beaded at the tip of Frank's cock. He has never sucked a cock, though he's often fantasized about it. Back home, he was too shy to seek out a partner for such experimentations, resigned to living a hermit's life. Michael could carry on the family line. He would be content with his work. Now that he's here, about to take Frank into his mouth, looking up at his beautiful dark eyes, he has no idea how a life of abstinence ever seemed satisfactory. Gerard takes his time. He wants to remember every second. The way Frank gasps. The way he tastes. He licks the head first, familiarizing himself, before sucking it carefully into his mouth. Frank moans over him, and the sound emboldens Gerard, makes pleasure curl thick and warm in his belly. He goes down further, taking as much of Frank as he can into his mouth. With his hands, he pets over Frank's thighs, teases his fingers over Frank's tight swollen balls. He can't take much, but Frank doesn't seem to mind. Frank's hand is warm and heavy on his head, stroking his hair. Gerard winds around Frank's cock, tipping his head up to the touch as much as he can without grazing Frank with his teeth. Frank obliges, curling his hand in Gerard's hair and holding him steady. The control is a relief, allowing him to close his eyes and just focus entirely on Frank.
"Gerard, I can't last."
Frank's thighs flex under his grasp, shifting and tensing. Gerard feels incredibly powerful, and he won't give up now. He keeps sucking, running his tongue along the underside of Frank's cock until Frank spins in his mouth. Gerard swallows the bitterness down and lets Frank's cock slip from his mouth. It looks beautiful, spit slick and softening. Frank looks somewhat dazed when he looks up, and Gerard smiles. He has to swallow again to clear his throat. "After all your beautiful fey lovers, this is enough for you?" Frank snorts, reaching down to cup Gerard's jaw.
"I've had my share of partners, but never a lover, and none as beautiful as you."
Gerard flushes, ducking his head. "You are a flatterer."
"It's only the truth."
Frank grins down at him.
"I'm afraid it would be ill-advised to return the favor, but I'd like to touch you."
Gerard thinks about Frank's sharp pointed teeth around his dick, and a shudder goes through him that isn't entirely fear, but he's too desperate to figure out how to negotiate that now. It will have to wait for another time. Instead, he crawls up so he can curl alongside Frank's body, pressing his needy cock against Frank's hip. "Please." Frank doesn't allow him to rut for his pleasure like an animal. He pushes Gerard onto his back so he can watch as he strokes his cock. Gerard wriggles, but Frank keeps him steady with another hand on his stomach. Frank toys with him, petting and teasing, until he thinks he might explode from the sensation. He reaches for Frank's wrist, squeezing as hard as he can.
"Frank, I need it, please."
Gerard tries to guide Frank's hand, force him to go faster, tighter, whatever it takes. But Frank resists, tugging his hand out of Gerard's grip.
"You got to have me as you wished. I only want the same."
"I didn't tease you," Gerard whines, pushing his hips up.
"Then you missed your chance."
Frank snickers, but Gerard can feel him giving in, starting to stroke again. His hand is so warm, his palm soft, nothing like the blistered farm boys who touched him back when. None of them were as confident, as deft as Frank. Once he decides to touch for real, it only takes a few minutes for Frank to bring him off. He moans as he comes, arching up off the bed with the force of it. Frank lets him up then, and Gerard eagerly rolls onto his side, curling in close to him. Frank grunts and mirrors him, wrapping his arms around him. The lights go out, thanks to a thought from Frank, plunging them into the darkness. They lie together like that. It's so quiet that Gerard thinks maybe Frank has already fallen asleep, until he speaks, his voice small in the darkness.
"I'll still take you back."
Gerard's stomach flips. "What?" There's a moment of silence before Frank speaks again.
"If you want me to take you back in the morning, I'll do it. I couldn't keep you here against your will."
The words bring so many feelings fluttering up through Gerard's chest, he isn't quite sure which one to land on. In the end, after much deliberation, he says, "You're an idiot." Frank relaxes in his arms. Gerard hadn't realized he was so tense.
"Watch your mouth. I'm still your king."
"And I'm your consort now, officially. Aren't I?"
"If you like,"
Frank says, offhand, but there's a warmth in his voice that makes it clear how much he likes that idea. "I do want to see my brother." Gerard yawns, resettling himself against Frank's chest. "And there are personal effects at home that I'd like to get, but that's all. I want to be here with you."
"Well, Prince Consort."
Frank squeezes Gerard's hip.
"It's a lofty title. I understand why you wouldn't want to give that up."
"Prince Consort and Royal Charm Weaver," Gerard adds. "He can fix the charm the witch broke, if he works hard enough. Or he can make a new one, a better one. Ray had mentioned a weaving. There's so much that he could experiment with, weaving for Fae. And eventually, humans will come back to the palace. He'll use fresh wildflower seeds," he decides through the fog of oncoming sleep, "for harmony and beauty. the resilient kind that grows in unsuspecting places. The end.